on, Stu. Be quiet.
Oh!
Hold on.
Oh, that's the best I could do. Sorry.
Oh, Brandon. I wondered where you were going with that one. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to cut Stu off. Welcome to the Four Outdoorsmen Sunday night, Bob Country. And I'm cutting Stu off because today, Mark, is what day?
It's Struman's birthday.
And he thought we forgot. So happy birthday, Stu.
It's
from
impossible.
All of us in Bob Country land, Four Outdoorsmen land, producer Mark, myself, Brandon, our engineer in the background. Happy birthday. There's
Thanks,
only
buddy.
One wild card, and we're glad we have him on our team.
I appreciate that. It was really nice of you. You know what's cool about it today? I got up pretty excited today because I had 7 text messages from my family wishing me happy birthday, and I've got 10 grandkids. What the hell does that mean? They forget about me? No, that was nice. No, that was, I'll tell you what, it is my birthday. Today is actually my birthday, September 16th. I'm 67 years old, left-handed Polak from east side of St. Paul, born in 1951. 67, I don't, now you guys just think the same thing because you're 40-something. You're,
yeah.
Damn, you're 40. Mark's damn,
I'm
you're
close.
40.
I'm knocking
yeah.
on the door.
Yeah, yeah, you're 37, 38, whatever it is. And as you get older, you physically change, of course. I've got man boobs and all that, but mentally you stay the same. I sound, now I act, and I feel internally like I'm 21, 22 years old, and I'll never change that. My body's going to change,
yeah.
but my attitude's never going to change. So I'm blessed, very blessed.
So welcome again, Four Outdoorsmen, Bob Country, Wild Card, Boomer here, producer Mark. Thank you to all of our 3,000 Facebook fans, folks that follow us on Instagram, and all the people that have traveled around us on the last 5 years of our journey talking
damn
hunting
near,
and
yeah.
fishing on the airwaves. Our podcast, thank you for passing over 100,000 plays and downloads. We really appreciate you. Wildcard, I have a serious question for you.
Uh-oh.
Is it fall or is it summer? Because I'm starting to get confused.
It is. Right now it is summer, and I'll tell you what, I'm going to go back to my birthday for a second, but I understand what you're talking about. I absolutely love this. The young lady who just left here, Heidi from Hitchville
yeah.
Said she absolutely loves this time of the year, this weather, and I do too. Give me 7-8 months like this, I'd be in heaven.
It's too hot this weekend.
Oh, I tell you what. No, here's what happened for me and Diana. This was a 3-day birthday party for me. My gorgeous wife, Diana, I love you, sweetheart. Thanks for being my best friend. And we went up to the cabin a couple of days back. And played a round of golf in Spooner, which is one of the nicest golf courses in western Wisconsin.
Golf.
And then we went to a place called Pine Brook, and Diana's beautician. She has to go. I go to Great Clips, which is about 4 blocks away from my house, to get a haircut once in a while. She's got to drive to Rice Lake, Wisconsin to get her haircut. One of those things. But anyway, that lady Sharon's a good friend of Diana's, and she suggested we go check out a restaurant called Pine Brook, just east of Spooner off of 53, and it's an old farmhouse it was 400 acres. This family bought 85 acres.
Yeah.
And you pull in, you look like you're going into a regular farm, and the food was wonderful. The setting was cool. So we went there for my birthday, Pine Brook, look it up.
Yeah.
And then today we got up and took a pontoon boat ride, went to watch the first half of the Vikings game, and I can tell you what, Mark Lukey has not only seen the first half, he's seen the second half and the overtime, and he had about 6 or 7 cocktails because he looks like he wants to go home. So we had
I'm exhausted, man. I got the whole family together. We all went to the game at a friend's house. There's about 20 people there. Emotional ups and downs of that game, and comes out in a tie.
Well, I tell you what is harder than that. At least you got to watch the game. So
that's true.
For our listeners out there, Four Outdoorsmen, Bob Country, we're sympathizing, remorsing, whatever you want to call it, over the Viking Packer game. Producer Mark is a Wisconsinite,
cheesehead.
Stru and I are Viking fans. So I'm coming back, which I'm going to get into in a minute, from Missouri on a project that I can talk about a little bit right now, but it involves early teal hunting. Double secret, but I'm going to talk early teal hunting, Stru.
You're just like
in
Kathy,
a minute.
You're just like Kathy Daniels, like when I was a junior in high school. She teased and she teased and she teased and she never put out.
Well, I tell you what, I'm going to talk about this in October. But imagine this. I was following the Viking Packer game on my phone through the ESPN website, right? And it's so delayed. And I'm like, okay, 14-7, 27. And I'm like, oh, man, whatever, Vikes. And I slam the phone down. And then all of a sudden it's 2014. And then it's 21-29, interception. And it doesn't tell me that I can't remember the name of the receiver, but they're calling for him to be gone.
Treadwell.
Yeah.
So I had one thing. So Nick, my son, and myself are big Packer fans. My wife's a Vikings fan, and our son Max is a Vikings fan. So that leaves Sam teamless. And
Max
so
can't even talk. How the hell do you
Max
know he's
a— Max can talk. Sam can't talk.
Oh, Sam can't talk. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we had a bet going this game. If the Packers win, Sam will be a Packers fan until he can talk, until he can choose.
You got to
work. Yeah. Right. So we had a bet. Now what do we do? It was a tie. I guess he's going to be a Lions fan or something.
I didn't know you could tie in the NFL. I didn't know you could tie. I also didn't know a kicker could miss two field goals.
Three.
But two in overtime, right?
Yeah. One in overtime.
I'll tell you, as a Packers fan, I'm glad we didn't lose, but even I feel bad for that kicker, man. Can you imagine?
You picture this. I was telling Heidi and the other people from Hitchville here, I was telling you that, but anyway, you got this guy missed. He's a rookie. He was a high draft choice. We traded up to get him from Auburn, which means he's got a hell of a reputation. So which means he knows what's going on. He missed three field goals. Now, two of them right around 50 yards, 52-48. Sometimes you make them, sometimes you don't. But both that I saw in the first half, he missed by 15 feet to the right, and now he comes to win the game 35-yarder in overtime, which I could kick straight ahead, and he misses that. This poor guy, it's like missing three putts on 16, 17, and 18 to win the Masters that are four-foot putts. How do you overcome that?
Well, I tell you what, I think it's a mental game, right? Like, I pitched in college down at Southern in Missouri, and you can have a bad game, and mentally, and again, we're going to get into hunting and fishing here, but it's even with hunting and fishing. You miss a turkey, like I've missed a turkey, and in one day, I missed two shots. And I know I missed the second shot because I second-guessed how I missed the first shot. And I think it bleeds into even punting or kicking, right? It becomes mental. You start second-guessing yourself. Showing my age, there was the famous closer from the Braves, Mark Woolers. Remember, he threw like 99, untouchable. And all of a sudden, something got in his head, and he couldn't even hit the catcher.
You look at guys. Like, good, Mark.
It's almost like us on Mille Lacs trying to catch smallmouth. Yeah. We miss one hook set, and then it's like an avalanche.
Yeah.
You're talking about that in professional sports, of course. Again, this is the Four Outdoorsmen. Thanks for being here. This is Strewman, Boomer to my left, and Mark Lukey to his left. We have a hell of a show tonight. But it's like in sports, remember Chuck Knobloch, and there was a I forget the catcher's name for the Minnesota
Second
Twins.
Second baseman for the Twins.
Yeah, Chuck he won a World Series with us, I believe.
Then he went to the Yankees.
All of a sudden, he could not throw the ball to first base without double clutching, and he would make error after error was in his head. He went to psychiatrists and everything, and his career was over because it got into his head.
It's all right, let's shift into hunting and fishing, guys.
So I like this talk.
I do like this talk.
Let's talk
right?
about other stuff.
Let's talk about just general stuff. That being said, guys, I had the ultimate pleasure of being down in Missouri for a project to be a part of filming and a special event that's taking place around waterfall season. And this is the time of year where teal start to migrate down south, because teal are the first ducks that start to migrate with the weather patterns. And with that being said, Missouri has an early teal season. So we went down there. And for our listeners out there that are into duck hunting, everyone knows that teal are erratic ducks, right? They are just, there's schools of thought that you either use a lonely hen, like a really soft call. People can call teal with their mouth, or you just shut up, right? And you just have a layout there, right?
What's a teal call sound like?
It's a real high pitch. It's like
what?
I can't even do it, right?
There you go.
Thank goodness there were professional guides around us from all over the country. We're gonna have these people on probably in October when things become more public with it. But it was a lot of fun, but boy, was it hot. You know, living in Missouri for 10 years, I forgot about the heat that comes down there, 80-something degrees. In Missouri, With teal season, you can only shoot at sun up or sunrise because you can't shoot a half an hour early like you typically can wild card.
Understood.
For identification purposes, because there are bigger ducks that kind of float around there. Did see some ducks kind of come in and out. Some interesting things with that. All of them were blue winged teal. They're very erratic. They come in at about 90 miles an hour. They yell, take them to get the shots. For me, it was really interesting. Wild card is when you're behind the camera or supporting the people behind the camera and you're seeing the wads come out of people's guns, you're seeing that person in the blind that always says, take them, and then got it. You know, they're the ones that always got a duck in every shoot and you're right behind them going, that guy. So me and the camera guys were taking bets with that.
Now, let me ask you a question. I told you this. I had a chance to go duck hunting out up with my buddy Tony Sampere and a bunch of guys up in Detroit Lakes. He's got a family
last year. Yep.
As a matter of fact, Wade Ryan, my good buddy, are going to go up again this year. And I'll pretend like I know what the hell I'm doing, which I don't, of course. But after the first day, and it got a lot of shooting the first day.
Yeah.
The second day, I had more fun watching the dogs and filming the dogs work and watching the guys call in the birds and filming that and sending them fills just for my cell phone. Yeah. You didn't do much shooting down there.
I didn't shoot at all. I didn't hunt.
Well, how did you feel about being behind the scenes as compared to being right in the thick of it?
Really, really tough at first. I'm not going to lie. But after a while, you really appreciate what people like. We've had Josh Shave on from Blue 42, which was, you know, our company we were down there with.
Yeah.
And you get an appreciation for, they see the whole piece. When you're involved with, like, you know, filming just recently for, you know, Made for the Outdoors with Lindsay, you know, you're just a part of it. But when you sit back and look at it, it's amazing how it all orchestrates together. You know, I learned a lot about, you know, at some of these places, these guides come from all over the countries. One of the kids that, and I say kid, he's in his low 20s. I mean, he comes from a farm in Nebraska, went to the University of Nebraska, and he's such a diehard duck hunter that he went to a fraternity. I'm like, you were in a frat, and here you are. It was a waterfall fraternity.
That's
so
cool.
The passion of these people down there was amazing. But there's definitely birds coming back in. The teal are on the move. Cannot wait for waterfall to open up here. But there's something else that opened up on the 15th in Minnesota.
And we're listening.
Do you know what that is?
Bow hunting.
Bow hunting and what else?
More bow hunting.
No, grouse. Grouse season opened up.
There's no grouse in Minnesota.
Well, it's always that 7-year cycle. The idea is that we're on that uplift of the 7 years. But what a fun weekend. 8 hours to get back here and wouldn't have it any other way.
I'm going to ask you a question about duck hunting then. Okay, you've hunted a million more times than I ever will. Teal hunting, what is the difference between shooting at a teal as compared to a wood duck or a mallard? What are the strategies? Is it different?
Well,
they're faster, earlier, slower.
One, it gets into, you have two categories of ducks. You got puddle ducks and you got divers. True. Teal, wood duck, and mallards fit into the puddle duck category, which means they're going to be more sloughs, right? Wood ducks are more woodsy. Teal are really erratic. I would say they're pretty call shy. I would argue that it's really hard to call in teal. They have their mind made up, and when they're coming in, they're coming in, and they typically come out of nowhere. Mallards and wood ducks, you can typically hear them in the blind before they're coming in. Teal are not very vocal, so you're typically going to see them, or it sounds like a jet fighter coming over you, and you better get ready to shoot right away because they're not going to stay in that pond or that slough or that flooded field where you're hunting for very long.
Now, when I was up in Detroit Lakes with Tony Sampere and his group, we did get a shot at a number of teal, but I'll tell you what, if you take the word teal, the duck teal, T-E-A-L, and switch those letters around, I was late every time. I didn't. I think I was behind him every time I shot.
Yeah, I tell you, it's you definitely want to put your lead on any type of duck. You know, the duck that, all right, question for you. Yeah. Which duck is the fastest duck?
Gray duck.
No? Do you know, Mark? What is the fastest duck out there as far as speed?
Wood duck?
Nope.
Well, they fly.
Canvasback.
Canvasback?
Yeah, been clocked
and
up.
And they're gorgeous. I tell you what, they're gorgeous.
And, you know, the bull canvasback is kind of the Cadillac of ducks that people want to shoot. You know, they'll be tracked up to 62 miles an hour. And if you don't believe me, you can Google it.
Wow.
So what a quite fun adventure. This Tuesday, I'm going to be heading out to Mille Lacs for bringing a guy and a girl out there. We're donated a trip for a fundraiser for, I believe it was, I can't remember the name. That's awful. But we'll be doing that on Tuesday, so we'll see what that bite is like. And speaking of Mille Lacs, there was a tournament up out of Izades this weekend, and it was a new format. It came from Classic Bass, which follows the Major League Fishing format, where you don't keep the bass. This was for walleyes, where you don't keep the walleyes. Of course, you can on Mille Lacs anyways. But it's all about the number of fish you catch and the inches, right? That can, you know, they can do a measurement for pounds, but it's all about the number of fish you can catch. And about 37-40 walleye anglers participated in this. And the winner of this event, and it's the first of its kind on Mille Lacs, was Dylan Nussbaum. Remember who that was?
I do, yes.
The 20-year-old kid. So congratulations to Dylan. And I also want to give a big shout-out.
Where is he from now?
Pennsylvania.
He's the kid that won the Devil's Lake thing. Yeah.
Oh, he's on fire.
He's on fire. And
he's not roofing. He's not roofing today.
There was a big musky tournament. I believe it was on Vermilion. And we had another friend of the show win that. I think they caught three or four muskies to take it. John Hoyer. Remember him? The guy who was in Russia and he caught that big, that fish.
Yes.
John Hoyer.
And his family invented the deck of cards. That's
so
the guy.
Two winners of two really big tournaments. Friends of the show, so congratulations to Dylan and John on your
victories.
I would
love to have John Hoyer on because, of course, we have the Hunting Shack off of Lake Vermilion, haven't been up there for a couple of years. But my son Mike just came back from there. He spent a couple of days on Vermilion, did very, very well. And then he and his buddy Matt went up to Lake of the Woods and caught some nice big ones, 28, 25, 25, and a couple of 23s. But it was a lot tougher because the wind was kicking up on Lake of the Woods. But I'm excited about what's happening with Lake Vermilion. Mike and Matt went out there for the first day, caught about 30 walleyes in about 2 hours and kept with the legal. But they're all 14 to 18. Good fish, nothing big, but they had a great time. But I'd love to have Mr. Hoyer on to talk about Lake Vermilion.
Yeah, well, I'd love to have him talk on, like, what's a muskie tournament like? Like, how is that ran? I know you fished one in Wisconsin.
I did. It was an all-weekend tournament.
And, yeah, this was all weekend, too.
Yep, it's different. It's different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like if you catch one, you have a chance of winning.
These guys catch four. Can you imagine that? And so it's going to be exciting. We got fun stuff. I know we're going to get to our shout-outs, but stay tuned because we are going to have Tanner Cherney on. We call him our fifth outdoorsman from Devil's Lake. He's going to talk about a mule deer hunt that he had in South Dakota. And we're talking about the Minnesota Zoo and some of their conservation efforts. But hold on, Stru. We got some shout-outs, right, Mark?
Yeah, quick shout-outs before we go. We want to say hello from Corey from What's Working Now Facebook page. He said, congratulations to Drew and his new bride, Christy. The fish in Detroit Lakes area got a break this weekend, but expect more reports on What's Working Now Facebook page. And also a shout-out from the Zeiss family. And if anyone has a shout-out, has pictures of what they did this weekend, or just want to say hi, go to our Facebook page and comment on the Four Outdoorsmen shout-out post, and we will mention you on air.
Yeah, I've got a shout-out from Will Goebel. We've had Will Goebel on before, the young man who was from the Matamita area. He's been involved in bow hunting and target shooting, everything else in the rest of the world. His dad is a good friend of mine, and his granddad's a great friend of mine. But he just said, got a quick bow hunting report for you guys for the opener weekend. The rain up in northern Pike County made it slow on Saturday morning. Rained till about 8:30, then cleared up. But I had a nice bobcat. I watched a bobcat for about 10 minutes behind me in the brush behind me. Not big, but it was a lot of fun. Nothing too active up here. Saw a lot of deer Saturday evening, but nothing during the day. But the bobcat trip he said was really, really, really cool experience.
And I want to give a shout out to John Hegstrand, who got his first couple of Canadian honkers. So congratulations, John. And speaking of a bow hunting,
sky carp, some people call them.
Yeah, sky carp.
You know?
Hey, they're big birds, though. And I tell you what, I'm super excited for fall fishing right now because they are getting their feed bag on. They're chasing the creek chubs. They're chasing the red tails. This is an amazing time to be an outdoorsman or woman in the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, I tell you what, we're going to be back in a few minutes, but Seth Stapleton from the University, not the University of Minnesota, but he's a field conservation supervisor for the Minnesota Zoo Conservation Biology. We're going to talk about a lot of things, including the black rhino issues in South Africa, a lot of poaching. What can we do about that? Seth Stapleton, right after this word.
Missed part of Bob Outdoors? No problem. Just click on the weekend tab at mybobcountry.com to listen back to the Four Outdoorsmen anytime.
If you love walleye fishing, then you'll love Devil's Lake, North Dakota, where walleye season is open 365 days a year. Plus, you can keep 5 walleyes a day with a 2-day possession limit. What does that mean? You can bring home 10 walleyes to the freezer, baby, and there's no slot limit. Devil's Lake just doesn't have world-class walleye fishing. It's got awesome jumbo perch, northern pike, and white bass. For lodging and guide options, up-to-date fishing reports, visit devilslakend.com.
Tis the season, my friends, so make sure you guys are ready. Lakes Trading Company not only sells and buys new and used guns, they offer on-site gunsmithing. Hit the lever action on my 3030 was giving me problems, and Lakes Trading Company gave it back to me better than new. They buy, they sell, they trade, offer consignment, provide ammo, scopes, accessories, training, conceal and carry classes. Man, Lakes Trading Company is the premier firearm destination in the Twin Cities. I'll tell you, they're great people, too. Check them out. Go to lakestradingco.com.
It's Neil here for Blue Sky Services, and it's September, and it's their busiest part of the year, so I want to give you a little sense of urgency today. If you need your windows, siding, or gutters cleaned before the winter hits, now is the time to give Blue Sky Services a call before their schedule fills up. I recently had my windows and siding done. They did a fantastic job, and they can do the same for you. So go online today to blueskyservices.com. That's blueskyservices.com, and schedule your appointment today.
Commence Exxon and Mobil field test. Scientist observes subject B at station. Subject B earns Exxon and Mobil rewards plus points, points she can use to save on gas, coffee, car washes, and more. Subject B should share the wealth and buy me a coffee. Subject B looks like she's leaving. Subject B hasn't purchased me anything yet. Subject B has left. Conclusion, Exxon and Mobil rewards plus makes refueling rewarding, and Subject B owes me a coffee. Perhaps a donut.
Sign up today at ExxonMobilRewardsPlus.com. Terms and conditions apply. Available at participating Exxon or Mobil branded locations.
Imagine your dream carpet installed for free. The Home Depot offers all-inclusive installation on minimum purchases of $699. That's removal of your old carpet, basic furniture moving, and stairs. So the dream carpet you want comes at the price you were expecting. Free carpet installation that's actually free. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing. Valid only on showroom carpet price. $1 or more per square foot. Specialty items may be priced separately. License numbers including BC147263 available at homedepot.com/license numbers.
Total Country Bob FM.
Doors, I'm going to tell you what. It's Mark Lukey, the producer, and Strewman, Steve Straczynski, here all by ourselves because the middleman, the guy who knows what the hell he's talking about, Boomer, is in the bathroom. Come on, Boomer. We got to run this show without you. I tell you what, we're going to talk to Seth Stapleton, I think. Brandon, is Seth with us right now? Seth Stapleton, are you there, my friend? Uh-oh.
Seth, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Seth Stapleton, thanks for being on the 4 Outdoorsman, sir. I'll tell you what, it's a wonderful day. Thank you for being on the 4 Outdoorsman.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Well, this is going to be a lot of fun. I'll tell you what, Seth, you have to be patient with us because I'm looking at your bio here, and listen to this. Boomer's just showing up. Just came back.
Thank you for announcing to the world.
Just
Bob
came back
Country
from the
30,000 people.
But I'll tell you what, Seth Stapleton is a guy with the Minnesota Zoo Conservation Department, Conservation Biology Department, Department of Fisheries. But listen to his background here, and this is going to be interesting for us, Seth. Here's some of the things he enjoys doing. He loves to conserve marine turtles, especially the hawkbill sea turtles in Eastern Caribbean, climate change, wildlife population. Some of the publications Seth Stapleton's been involved with, methods in ecology and evolution, polar bear population, long-term stability, leatherback turtles, females, tracking Arctic. He's done everything. Seth, you are a PhD gentleman. Love the outdoors as much as we do. You have to understand, you're going to be talking to three guys who just had a contest who could blow the biggest nose bubble, you know? So, yeah.
Nose bubble.
Yeah, so that's you're talking with the wrong guys here. I'll tell you
I
what,
got it with the size of my nose.
Yeah, buddy. Yes, you do. Thanks for being on the 4 Outdoorsman. Mark got a hold of you. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I work with the Minnesota Zoo at Minnesota Bound. And, you know, we just get a heads up on some great things going on with conservation. And that kind of led to Seth being able to come on with us. And thank you very much, Seth, for joining us. And we are outdoorsmen, but outdoorsmen are passionate about conservation. And we
absolutely. Yeah.
So we really are interested in what you guys are doing over there. There's a couple issues we're going to talk about tonight. like the Rhino, and then just kind of give a background of what you guys are doing, and then how can Joe Schmoes like us help you along the way?
Sure. Sounds great.
So, Stu, do you have...
Well, we'll talk about, okay, of course, when Mark brought this up, the biggest thing, the issue, one of the things you're involved with, of course, is the Black Rhino.
Let's have him talk a little bit about himself first. I mean, I know you did a quick bio, but Seth, where are you from?
Oh,
tell our listeners on Four Outdoorsmen Bob Country.
All of a sudden, you go to the bathroom, you think you're in charge.
That's right. Well, 1 minute blurb about Seth.
Okay, sure. Again, thanks for the opportunity to speak with you guys here this evening. Well, I'm originally from Virginia. I bounced around the country a little bit. I moved to Minnesota about 10 years ago, so it's sort of my adopted home at this point. And for about 8 years, I was actually based at the University of Minnesota. So that's where I did my graduate work. I worked there for a couple years. And my graduate work focused on polar bears and polar bear ecology in the Canadian Arctic. So we were trying to figure out how many bears there are, how well they're reproducing, how many cubs they're having, how well they're surviving, that type of stuff. And then my other passion, as you mentioned, is down in the Caribbean. So I love sea turtle work as well. About 2 years ago, I had the opportunity to transition to the Minnesota Zoo, which I was really excited about, just because there are a whole diversity of programs that we have at the zoo related to conservation. So I was really excited about being able to expand the breadth of the different types of animals that we work on there.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Seth, before we get to the black rhino, you mentioned the rhino, you mentioned the polar bear, and one of the
sure.
publications you were involved in a while back is involved tracking Arctic wildlife through satellite imaging. Would you explain more about that?
Yeah, sure. This was actually, so I've done a bit of field work in the Canadian Arctic, and obviously weather can be a huge issue there, and it can really limit what we're able to do. So I can remember the fog was settling in one day. We had been down with weather for a long time. So typically, I should take a step back and say that typically polar bear work is done based from aircraft. So it's usually a helicopter, but it can also be a fixed-wing aircraft, like a small fixed-wing airplane. So we were a little bit frustrated with the fact that the weather wasn't cooperating. We couldn't fly. We couldn't go out and get our work done. And jokingly, I said to my boss at the time, hey, I wonder if we could look at something like Google Earth and be able to spot bears from satellite imagery.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I went back with a colleague at the University of Minnesota, and we tried a few things out and realized that, lo and behold, you could actually see things like polar bears from space using high-resolution satellite imagery.
That's crazy.
So it's a pretty simple idea. For polar bears, what we're doing is just looking for the white spots on the dark background. Polar bears spend most of the time on sea ice, so it would be a white bear on a white background, but they do spend in parts of the world some of their time on land, and it's not going to be snow covered. So you're looking at a bear on a green background or a dark brown background. So all we were doing is looking for the white spots on the dark background, and we compared multiple images, and when the white spot was there on one image and it was not there on the other image, that's a pretty good sign to us that was indeed a polar bear that we spotted from space.
Hey, Seth, you know, we'll get to the rhino thing here in a couple of seconds. You know, because everyone starts out doing something, wanting to do something, and 90% of the time they end up doing something differently. I sell real estate full-time. I can swear to God that was not my plan 31 years ago. Boomer is a marketing and a social media guru, and Mark Lukey is a producer and a salesperson of an outdoor television show called Ron Shearer Productions. How did
sure.
you, as a young kid, what did you want to do as a young kid, and who was your mentor?
Yeah, I got to say, I am doing exactly what I envisioned myself doing when I was 3 or 4 years old. I've got three little boys at home, and hopefully they'll remain quiet so we can
no
have
problem.
A nice chat here. I can hear them stomping around upstairs, though.
That's not a problem, not a problem.
Okay.
Good
and,
for you.
Yeah, I've always loved wildlife. I loved the outdoors since I was a little guy, and I just never really knew that there were careers that would allow you to really embrace that wildlife conservation piece of it. So I'm doing exactly what I've always wanted to do.
Well, I'll tell you what, you're one of the few
10% of people.
Yeah, you're one of the few people who are that blessed, and more power to you. I'm so happy for you because you wake up every day and going to work is not going to work. You're doing exactly what you love to do. Go ahead, Boomer.
So, Seth, Boomer here. Thanks again for joining us on the Four Outdoorsmen on Bob Country. For folks just tuning in, we have Seth on. He's a field supervisor, works specifically with the Minnesota Zoo and conservation efforts. I believe he has a PhD or close to a PhD.
Oh, yeah, he does. Yep.
With that being said, Seth, this recent study that you were doing using satellites on Arctic polar bears, what were a few key findings that popped up from this study?
Yeah. I think one of the key things we learned that you can, you know, I love technology, and I think we constantly have to be pushing the envelope a bit and trying to figure out how we can leverage that technology to answer the questions that we need to answer. So we now know that you can monitor polar bears in some situations using this high-resolution satellite imagery. It's not going to work everywhere. At this point, the technology is not good enough to allow us to see bears on ice and bears on snow, which is where they spend the vast majority of their time, but it does allow us to see bears in certain conditions in certain parts of the world. So I think that's really the take-home message is you know, trying to find the technology that's going to suit a particular case at a particular point in time.
All right, Seth, let's get to the black rhino. It's something else that you're very, very passionate about in South Africa. I don't know the countries and whatever else is out that way, but the black rhino, you've been working with this a lot of organizations trying to prevent poaching and reestablish the population of black rhino someplace close to where it was years ago. 10, 20 years ago, there were 100,000 black rhinos in South Africa. Now there's 5,000. Now that's up from 2,500 about 3, 4, 5 years ago. That's a long way from 100,000. Tell us what's happening to the black rhino in South Africa.
Yeah, sure. Over the past century or so, black rhinos have been extensively poached, and their populations have really plummeted, and that's largely because of the horn itself. So the rhino horn is in high demand in places like Asia for its medicinal values or perceived medicinal values.
Perceived, yes, sir.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of science. There's no science that actually supports that. So in response to that, a lot of organizations have taken the approach of sort of a top-down command and control. So we are going to try to catch poachers. We are going to try to take these military-style actions to prevent poaching from happening. And what the zoo did, our work actually started in a country called Namibia, which is just in the northwest of South Africa. It's almost 10 years ago at this point, and we decided to take a slightly different approach. What we're really doing is trying to work with the local communities and increase the value that they attach to rhino populations and really empower them to monitor their rhinos and really recognize that these are valuable animals, these are iconic animals that people really appreciate on the landscape.
Go ahead, Marco.
I have a question for you. You know, we hear a lot of, obviously, people trophy hunting or whatever in Africa. Is the black rhino something that people can pay to go hunt? Or what is your overall feeling on these kind of excursions? Are they good for the community, or do they hurt populations of things like this?
Yeah. So that's a little bit out of my knowledge base. I know that the safari-type hunts mm-hmm. do occur, and I think in the appropriate circumstances, they do send some economic benefits to the communities, but it's really something that I'm not totally familiar with, okay. So I'm probably not the best person to speak to.
Well, I can tell you, let me finish this moment. I can tell you this, that I've done some research. I love what you're doing, and I loved looking up all the research. This is a fun part of my job. But there's a white rhino as well, which is very, very similar to a black rhino, except for the shape of the mouth or something like that. But back in South Africa someplace, they legally will hunt some white rhinos. And last year there were 50 white rhinos that were legally harvested. Why not, to prevent poaching, why not, like Mark said, why not have a legal season to harvest some black rhinos to maybe prevent or disdain or to take away from potential poaching?
Yeah, and of course the big case that this goes back to is the gentleman from Texas, I believe he paid several $100,000 a few years ago for the right to go harvest a black rhino, and I know that created a huge social media uproar. So again, I'm not totally familiar with the safari hunting and the economic benefits it brings back to the communities there. But I do know that there's a real need for everybody on all sides to be, you know, more cordial and not to attack folks through social media and that type of stuff. So,
yeah. I know that when you look at the black rhino, the official statement on it, as far as the health of the animal as a species, is it's critically endangered, right?
Right.
With an estimated 5,000 left worldwide. You know, Seth, there was something that popped up on CNN, I believe, a long time ago. It was back in July, where there was black rhinos that were moved from Kenya into one of their national parks. And of the 11, 10 had died because of high salt in the water, and it was creating some issues with that. Are there, if I'm right, are there black rhinos that are actually going to be at the Minnesota Zoo? Is that potential that could happen? Or, Seth, is all the conservation efforts going to stay focused on where their natural habitat is?
At this point, as far as I know, all of our conservation efforts are going to stay over in Namibia in southern Africa. But we do have a biologist named Jeff Montefering. He does a lot of work over there with the local communities. And again, what he's really trying to do is empower those local communities to increase the value that they place on those rhinos. And a couple of the benchmarks we've reached in this past year, number one, there hasn't been any poaching in this area in Namibia. It's called the Kinene region in northwestern Namibia over the past year. And you compare that to what's going on in South Africa, where rhinos are still getting hit pretty hard, and there's hundreds of rhinos getting poached on an annual basis, again, for that rhino horn for Asia. So that's one big thing we're really excited about. And the other big thing we're excited about is this area of Namibia has been really been hit hard by a drought over the past 4 years, which, of course, hits rhinos, it hits the local people, it hits all types of wildlife in that area. So that drought broke about 6 months ago. And, of course, with the rains comes the vegetation, and with the vegetation comes all sorts of new wildlife. So there have been a number of new rhino that have been born over the past few months as well. So that's a pretty exciting development for us, too.
Yeah, congratulations on that, Seth.
We're talking with Seth Stapleton. He's the field conservation supervisor of the Minnesota Zoo Conservation Biology Guy. And I tell you, we're talking about the black rhino in South Africa. In 2014, there were over 1,200 poached out of South Africa. In 2016, just about 1,000, so they're going the right direction. But one, there's an awful lot of organizations who are involved in trying to prevent poaching in South Africa, to protect the black rhino. It says well over 100 organizations. I tell you what, in my opinion, too many cooks spoil the soup. Are there too many organizations trying to help? How do you organize all that?
Yeah. So we have a primary biologist who does a lot of the organization for our work there, and he does have a number of partners. I don't think we have quite that many partners that we work with. So, again, he'd probably be the best person to speak to regarding are there too many cooks in the kitchen. I think that's a fair question if there are so many organizations involved. Again, it's great to have that support, that enthusiasm, but making sure that it's streamlined and as efficient as possible.
Seth, producer Mark here. We have about 2 minutes left, so I just wanted to say thank you for all the work you do, and it's really cool that you wouldn't think the Minnesota Zoo would be so involved worldwide in helping populations. How can normal outdoorsmen, people that like conservation, help your cause? Is it a fundraising issue? Is it an awareness issue, or just teaching people about this? How can your average Joe Schmo help out?
Yeah, I think it's all of the above. Easiest thing to do is just come out to the zoo. Come visit us, learn more about our programs, learn more about the animals that we have, and a portion of your admission goes directly to conserving wildlife, and that's both here in Minnesota and around the zoo. And one of the other things I wanted to mention is we're talking about black rhino, which are obviously halfway around the world, but there's a lot of great stuff happening right here in Minnesota. You know, we're working closely with the Fish and Wildlife Service and the DNR on prairie butterfly conservation. We're working with some other organizations on turtle conservation. So we don't just work internationally. We do a lot of stuff right here in our own backyard.
Hey, quick, you have 20 seconds. How come we have so many more monarch butterflies than last year?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
How come we have so many monarch butterflies now as compared to 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago?
I think their populations just kind of ebb and flow a little bit. So it's going to depend on things like the climate and the site-specific conditions. So maybe just weather-wise it's been a little bit better, but I think there are a few other parameters that are involved there.
Thank you very much. Seth Stapleton, yeah. Thanks for being on the 4-Outdoorsman. He's with the Minnesota Zoo Conservation Biology. He's doing a lot of things. Go to the Minnesota Zoo, and thank you, Seth, for being on. We will support you. You support us, and thanks for being on the 4-Outdoorsman.
Thanks very much, guys. Have a good evening.
You bet.
All right, stay tuned. Tanner Cherney talking mule deer hunting in the Black Hills next on the 4-Outdoorsman on Bob Country.
Just enjoying Bob Outdoors with the 4-Outdoorsman on a Sunday evening. It's a good thing.
If you love walleye fishing, then you'll love Devil's Lake, North Dakota, where walleye season is open 365 days a year. Plus, you can keep 5 walleyes a day with a 2-day possession limit. What does that mean? You can bring home 10 walleyes to the freezer, baby, and there's no slot limit. Devil's Lake just doesn't have world-class walleye fishing. It's got awesome jumbo perch, northern pike, and white bass. For lodging and guide options, up-to-date fishing reports, visit devilslakend.com.
Lakes Trading Company does it all. Not only do they deal in new and used firearms, they offer on-site gunsmithing and ladies-only classes, and Lakes Trading Company buys gun collections. If you're looking to sell your collection and don't know where to start, Lakes Trading Company buys firearms, accessories, safes, and everything else in between. There's no safer way to dispose of a collection than to work with a licensed firearm dealer. Work with the most knowledgeable staff in the industry. Trust Struman on this one. Go to LakesTradingCo.com.
Every challenge is more easily beat with America's number one selling compact tractor brand. Kubota tractors are made to tackle snow, grass, dirt, heavy hauls, and big lifts. Now take home our subcompact and compact tractors with zero money down, plus 1.99% financing for 84 months. Demo one today. You can't beat a Kubota. Now through December 31st, 2018, see us or go to KubotaUSA.com for more information. Visit Arnold's in Kimball, Glencoe, St. Martin, Mankato, and St. Cloud today.
Commence Exxon and Mobil field test. Scientist observes Subject B at station. Subject B earns Exxon and Mobil rewards plus points, points she can use to save on gas, coffee, car washes, and more. Subject B should share the wealth and buy me a coffee. Subject B looks like she's leaving. Subject B hasn't purchased me anything yet. Subject B has left. Conclusion, Exxon and Mobil rewards plus makes refueling rewarding, and Subject B owes me a coffee. Perhaps a donut.
Sign up today at ExxonMobilRewardsPlus.com. Terms and conditions apply. Available at participating Exxon or Mobil branded locations.
Imagine your dream carpet installed for free. The Home Depot offers all-inclusive installation on minimum purchases of $699. That's removal of your old carpet, basic furniture moving, and stairs. So the dream carpet you want comes at the price you were expecting. Free carpet installation that's actually free. The Home Depot. More saving. More doing. Valid only on showroom carpet price. $1 or more per square foot. Specialty items may be priced separately. License numbers including BC147263 available at homedepot.com/license numbers.
My number two does not look like a number two. I don't know what to call it. Is there a number three?
Table for four, please. Anything close to the restroom.
A middle seat with these stomach problems? That's my fear of flying.
Sound like you? If it does, you could be one of the many people with a digestive condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. Even if you don't know what EPI is, you might know the symptoms. Frequent diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain. If you have even just one of these symptoms, you could still have EPI, because not everybody experiences EPI the same way, which is why it's so important to open up to your doctor about all your symptoms. And the good news is, EPI is manageable. So don't keep a lid on it. Go to IdentifyEPI.com, complete the symptom checker, and use it to have a conversation with your doctor. Don't keep a lid on it. Visit IdentifyEPI.com. Brought to you by AbbVie.
Total Country Bob FM.
All right, happy Sunday. Warm evening in the land of 10,000 lakes. Boomer here. Great show so far on the Four Outdoors and on Bob Country. We talked a little bit about the classic bass walleye edition that just happened on I-80s on Mille Lacs. Congratulations to Dylan Nussbaum. Congratulations to other friend of the show, John Hoyer, on winning the big muskie tournament up on Vermilion. And then my early teal hunting project that I went down to Missouri for with Blue 42, which we'll talk more about in October once that event becomes more public. And next is our friend, our fifth outdoorsman, Tanner Cherney from Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Tanner, welcome back to the Four Outdoorsmen, my friend.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Every day's a gift, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I can't complain. It's we still got fishing going on, and hunting season has arrived upon us in the Dakotas.
So did you hear our last conversation with Seth Stapleton at all?
I did not.
Well, yeah, I'm not surprised he didn't, because if you follow Tanner on Facebook, he has been all over the place. Between going out to the Black Hills to go chase mule deer, he was recently at the big AGLOW conference, which is the Association of Great Lakes Outdoor Writers. They get together once a year, and these are people involved in media, traditional media, you know, print, radio, TV, now spilling over into social media. And then Tanner had a few folks for a post-media event at Devil's Lake. Tanner, real quick, how did AGLOW go? What did you guys do? And then how did it go with the post-event you had at Devil's Lake soon following the AGLOW event?
AGLOW went wonderful. You know, it was in Bismarck, so it was pretty much right in our backyard. And it was a great conference. There was a lot of good seminars. But the best part about that is networking with a lot of these media folks, whether they're writers or for podcasts or radio guys like you. And, you know, we had 8 of them come up to do a post-conference event. And Friday, Saturday, it went really well. We had good weather, caught lots of fish, got a lot of good stories out of it. So we are very happy with how it turned out.
That's awesome, Tanner. Now, let's get into the meat and potatoes. We love to
No. He didn't bring back any meat. Never mind. Sorry, Tanner.
Yeah. We speak at a very simple level here, Stu. You're messing me up. But, Tanner, let's talk about, we always love having you on the show to give us updates. Thank you again, Devil's Lake. A great place. Waterfall season is right around the corner. It looks like a good year for ducks in the Prairie Pothole region. Yeah. So I know there's going to be a lot of satisfied people there. We're going to be heading up there with a date that's TBD, to be determined, where the four outdoorsmen do their cast and blast, walleye fishing, and shooting some mallards. But Tanner, you have an extreme passion besides the stuff that you do in Devil's Lake to head out west and chase some big game. And most recently, you headed out to the Black Hills to go mule deer hunting again with your bow. Talk to us about it. I know you do your vlogs, which are awesome, but talk to our listeners on Bob Country and the Four Outdoorsmen about your recent adventure chasing mule deer.
Sure. And actually, I'm going to correct you before I get going. It wasn't the Black Hills. It was actually the Badlands of North Dakota.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You bet. So, no, what I love about it so much is, like you said, I have a passion for it. And who knew in North Dakota that our archery tags for state residents are over-the-counter, and it's a less than a four-hour drive to that country that I'm going to. So I've been trying to take advantage of these weekends that I can get a little extended time and go camping out there and chase these mule deer with my archery equipment. And spot-and-stalk mule deer hunting, if you've never done it, is super challenging. I shot my first one with a rifle last year, so that was 26 years in the making. And now I'm trying to accomplish the impossible of getting one with my bow. And trying to get within one of those deer within 60 to 70 yards is an accomplishment in itself. So I'm addicted to it. The last 2 weekends out there have been just absolutely phenomenal with finding deer, trying to get stalks done, and all the other wildlife that you encounter in the whole process of it.
Well, Tanner, I know, you know, chasing whitetails versus mule deer is a whole different experience. So talk to our listeners on the Four Outdoorsmen on Bob Country. What is that whole process like from morning to evening when you decide to go mule deer, from setting up camp and then actually going out there with your spot and stock approach?
Sure. So right now, especially early season, until the rut really kicks off, you know, you're out probably an hour before even visible light is out there. And what you're trying to do is hike in a couple miles to the top of the buttes and get a really good vantage point. And especially when the afternoons lately have been reaching 75 to 85 degrees, a lot of the deer movement is in the morning. So you're trying to get on these vantage points out there with your binoculars or spotting scope and find these deer grazing out on the grassy tops. And when you do find one grazing, you watch that deer for hours until you figure out where it's going to bed down at. And once you find it bedded, that's when the real fun begins. And now you got to plan your attack on how you're going to stalk this thing with the wind directions, with the thermals out there in the elevation. The other big thing is early season right now when it's hot, you may find a deer bedded at 900 yards away and it's in the shade. But if you don't close that distance in 2 hours and the sun hits that deer again while you're stalking, that sucker's out of there into another shady spot. So it's a game of inches. And then in the afternoon, things slow down until evening. But another good thing to do in the afternoon is get a couple of those spots again and just start picking apart the areas that have shade in them and trying to look for antler tines, the white butt of a mule deer, and just trying to find them when they're already bedded, which is like the game, you know, Where's Waldo? It's just like that, trying to find them in a crowd. So It's a daunting task, and I believe the first weekend I was out there, it was 3.5 days, and we covered about 32 miles of hiking in 90 degrees. So it takes a toll on a person after a while, but it's so challenging.
Hey, Tanner, Struman here. Thanks again for being on the Four Outdoorsmen, and thanks for being such a good friend of ours. You know, we're talking about I don't know this kind of crap, but that you talked about, okay, you see one of the mule deer bedded down in the shade maybe 900 yards away, and if you don't get there in a couple of hours, the shade moves and they move. Is there a chance that you can think ahead where the shade's going to be in 3 or 4 hours and get behind that deer, and hopefully that deer moves in the same direction that you had planned on going?
There is, but, you know, the country where you're hunting out there, you know, a lot of the listeners are probably thinking 900 yards, that isn't very far away. Why does it take you 2 hours? But when you get into some of these draws and canyons out there, there's so many escape routes that you think, oh, there's one way out, so if I get to that, I'll see him leave. And then you crest over the top of that ridge, and you're like, holy crap, there is like 20 different routes for this deer to escape out of. And it really, really becomes an eye-opener on how you got to get them when they are bedded.
So for folks just tuning in to the Four Outdoors on Bob Country, we're talking to Tanner Cherney, our friend from Devil's Lake, North Dakota, about mule deer hunting. Last year, he killed one with a rifle in the Badlands of South Dakota. This year, he's going for the task of impossible almost, which is shooting one with a bow. Tanner, a couple quick questions for our listeners on the Four Outdoorsmen. One, how do you select the land where you're going to hunt? And two, what is some of the equipment that you bring with when you're actually out there spotting, and why is it critical to have that equipment when you're going through the stock?
Sure. So some of the land I do, it's all public land. So one of the big pieces of equipment that I have is my Onyx map on my handheld GPS, and that shows me property boundaries, and I'm hunting all the grasslands out there. So I'm basically finding grassland areas that have not a lot of roads or trails going through them, so you can get away from the traffic, and then hiking in there and glassing. And like you said, the equipment you want, I have a pair of binoculars, Vortex binoculars that are 15 by 50, which are awesome for looking apart things. But when you get out to that 900 to 1500 yards and you're looking at whether that's a deer or is that a rock, I have a 60 power spotting scope that you can really pick apart those areas and find if that's actually a deer, or even if it's a deer you want to go after and waste your day trying to get to that thing. So your optics are optics and GPSs, and your boots are crucial equipment out there.
You know,
without those, you.
Oh, go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
I was going to say, without a good pair of boots in some of that country, you're not going to get to half the places you're going to without fatiguing your legs.
You know, Tanner, I think of my days of chasing antelope out in Medicine Bow, Wyoming, and a lot of it has that same type of methodology where, you know, we're looking for the pronghorns on the top of the hill because, you know, they have eyeballs that are like magnifying glasses.
Yeah, yeah.
They can see anything. And trying to be nifty, but you know, when we're spotting and trying to find those antelope, we always had the conversation of trying to stay discreet with the sun not glaring against our spot glasses, right? Because if they saw that reflection, it automatically brought attention. Does that same process or theology hold true for mule deer hunting?
Oh, absolutely. And then the fact of your noise, too, trying to get that wind in the right direction for the smell and the noise. I mean, I always tell people, they think of, how does a deer hear you a couple hundred yards away? And it's no different that when you're in your house and you hear some odd noise and all of a sudden you go on full alert, like, is someone breaking in? What's going on? Same thing for a deer when you're a couple hundred yards away and something's just not natural out in the wilderness out there that they're used to hearing, and it puts their senses on full alert.
Hey, Tanner Strewman here. I tell you, but how many days did you hunt, and how close did you get to a mule deer, and did you have a chance to get a shot? I can't picture having the patience to do this, number one. You're talking hours and days and maybe never get a shot. And to be able to get close enough, what do you have to be, 50, 60 yards, you said, to get that close and have that opportunity with all the senses of the mule deer has to be almost impossible. How close did you get?
Well, so last weekend when it was opener, I went out with three buddies, and me and another buddy were taking turns stalking. And I had a couple stalks where I didn't get close enough to get a shot, but the closest stalk we did get, which was my buddy's turn to shoot, we snuck within 12 yards of one on a cliff below us. And the adrenaline he had going and a little bit of a crosswind, when it finally got up and stood out, it was 21 yards away, and he'd shot right over the back. So just getting that close, we felt so accomplished, being able to at least see what we could do and now have that confidence going into the rest of the season.
Hang on a second. Is that guy the kicker for the Minnesota Vikings?
Hey-o.
Oh, that's good.
Hey, that's, you know, good. Tanner, a couple things. Even though you did not harvest a mule deer on your recent adventure out in the Badlands of South Dakota, a couple cool things popped up for you, right? Expand on what it was like finding a radio-collared bighorn sheep and then your encounter with a rattlesnake.
Cool.
Yeah, so the radio-collared bighorn was super cool. It was about a half mile from where we were actually camping, and my buddy Brett that was with, he was like, hey, there's a goat down there. And I'm like, really, a goat? This is not goat country. This is steep, rugged. And he goes, yeah, and it's got a collar on it. And as soon as he said that, I'm like, oh, there's no way. That's a freaking bighorn sheep. And then I'm like, that's a GPS radio-collared one that Game & Fish puts on there. And I'm like, you know how rare this is? So we were jacked by that, and we're sitting there for a half hour watching it. And then, yes, on Monday, on the way out of camp, I was driving all into the road, and I saw this thing slithering across the scoria out there, and I'm like, holy crap, that's a snake. And it looks like a big snake. So I instantly took the pickup to drive right over it, turned back around, and I'm like, that's bigger than I thought it was. So went up to it, and I'm like, oh, boy, that's a rattlesnake. And I was like, that's the first one I've seen in person. Not probably the way you want to kill it, but I got it. And it was just one of these neat experiences that I'm like, I'd rather run into it on the road than being hiking in the backcountry.
Tanner, did you have any hesitation, even though you ran over the rattlesnake? You know, you could have made up a better story, like,
oh yeah,
you know, I would've attacked it by hand and did a ninja move like Karate Kid. But even though after you ran over this rattlesnake, was there still some hesitation to, like, walk over there and pick it up?
Oh, yeah. We poked that thing with a stick for 5 minutes because they have this supposed reaction that they'll bite for a couple hours after they're dead. And then if you look at that picture close that I put on Facebook holding it, you can see how tilted my body is because I'm still very hesitant to hold the thing even though I know it's not going to do anything.
Hey, Tanner, producer Mark here. That's awesome you to go out west like that.
You aren't kidding.
You take some great pictures, too, if anyone wants to see some of them. You got to follow Tanner. He does some really great photography. We have a couple minutes left, and while we have you here, I just want to get a quick update on Devil's Lake. Obviously, it's supposed to be cooling down here, even though it was really hot. What are the fish patterns like now in Devil's Lake, and how's the bite out there?
Sure. Actually, the fishing's just getting going for fall bite. I was out all day yesterday. We had a phenomenal day. We probably caught about 40 fish in that 14 to 16-inch range. And right now, it's a simple presentation. We're just doing quarter to 3/8-ounce jigs with night crawlers on there. Bottom bouncers and spinners are still working. And as we get in a little bit later into fall here, next couple weeks, the bigger fish are going to come out to play as they get ready for winter. And that's going to be the same thing, jig and wraps, jig with a night crawler. Current areas along the bridges are going to start producing. So we're in store for a good fall. And then, like you said, the duck hunting is going to be coming up here in a couple weeks. And things are looking good. Our numbers came back really good for that, and as long as the waterfowl migration comes through like it normally does late October, it's going to be a good year for that as well.
So if someone from the cities or this area was interested in coming out and trying duck hunting out there, when does the season start, and what's the best way to go about it? Is it to call you guys, or how do they figure out what are good places to stay and go while you're in the Devil's Lake area?
Sure. So this actual next weekend will be our resident waterfowl season, and the weekend after that, that Saturday morning, will be opener for non-resident. And, you know, our website, which is devilslakeindy.com, has a list of guides on there that do waterfowl hunting. If you're not familiar with the area, we do have at our office an actual plots guide from our Game and Fish that shows all the public land in the area. So if you're looking for something along those lines, that's a great tool to use. But the most important thing for guys wanting to come waterfowl hunt up here is be ready to put a few miles on scouting in the evenings trying to find where these birds are coming off the roost and feeding at. So it's definitely doable for your do-it-yourself guy up here.
Well, I tell you what, Tanner Cherney, Devil's Lake, North Dakota, gave us the rundown on mule deer hunting in the Badlands of South Dakota. I have a sneaking suspicion you're going back out there, Tanner, plus a nice report on what's going on at Devil's with the fall feed bag and the waterfowl season that's right around the corner. Tanner, thank you again, our fifth outdoorsman, for joining us on the Bob Country at 6 o'clock tonight, and we'll be out there soon, my friend.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
You bet. Take care. Thanks, take care, Tanner. Buddy.
All right, man, what an action-packed show. Talking duck hunting in Missouri to mule deer hunting in the Badlands to fishing in Devil's Lake.
Boy, does Tanner have the life. Well, Seth Stapleton, thanks for being on as well. He's with the Minnesota Zoo Conservation Biology Guy, but thanks for being on
and
the
And thank you to Devil's Lake, Alumacraft Boats, Lakes Trading Company, Deadshot Custom Calls, and Waterfowl for supporting us to be on the show. And what else, Drew?
Well, you must have something else to say, don't you?
Get outdoors.
That's it.